Welcome to Healthy Aging, brought to you by the South Shore Coalition for Mental Health and Aging. Our goal is to provide our listeners with resources to increase their overall well-being. My name is Jonathan Guzman, and on today's program, we will be highlighting our annual Caregiver Symposium from 2016, focusing on brain health. Our coalition president, Debbie Kanin, who was also the director of admissions at the SunTowers Retirement Community, who sponsored the symposium, had this to say. Rather than focusing on educating our caregivers about the decline of their loved ones, this year the thought was to help our caregivers maintain brain function while they are being tasked with caring for their loved ones. According to the Byrd Alzheimer's Institute, more than 5 million people struggle with Alzheimer's disease. This, unlike cancer or heart disease, currently cannot be prevented, slowed, or cured. Presently in South Shore, free memory screenings are being held at 5 locations throughout our community. This is done monthly by the South Shore Coalition for Mental Health and Aging, and the goal is to hopefully catch a decline while options to assist are still a possibility. Among the speakers presenting, we were honored to have Bernadette A. Fausto, a doctoral student at the University of South Florida's School for Aging Studies. Representing the USF Health Byrd Alzheimer's Institute, Bernadette discussed the benefits of brain training exercises. Before continuing our program, a special thank you is due to the SunTowers Retirement Community for their annual sponsorship of the symposium, as well as to the USF Health Byrd Alzheimer's Institute for their participation in making the show possible. And now, our featured guest, Ms. Bernadette Fausto.
So today I'll be talking about the effectiveness of brain training programs among older adults. Here's the overview of my talk. I'll first talk about what happens with our cognitive abilities as we age, what can we do to maintain our cognitive abilities, what about brain fitness programs. I'll talk about some of the most compelling evidence of the most studied brain fitness program. I'll mention what makes a brain fitness program more effective than others. I'll talk to you about how you can choose a brain fitness program. And like Debbie said, I'll open the floor for questions. So first of all, what is cognition? We talk about this word, but how is it defined? It's broadly defined, and it comprises many different abilities. For example, as you see here, verbal abilities, so the ability to talk, the ability to comprehend speech. Mental quickness, so how fast can you think? Memory, can anyone remember what they had for dinner last night? I can't remember what I had for dinner last night, and I'm 27. Attention, so when you are attending to something and you're focused on something. Multitasking, so doing one task over here, like boiling some water and also handling the microwave at the same time. And then finally, planning and problem solving are also parts of cognition. What happens to our abilities with age? Some abilities do improve, for example, vocabulary, trivia, such as knowledge. That's why we do better with Jeopardy as we get older. Verbal skills. Some things do decline. For example, mental quickness, how fast we think. I will henceforth refer to this as speed of processing. Okay? That begins at age 25. Right. 25. I have 2 years of processing speed decline, right? Ignoring distraction, that also declines. So, you know, you might be focused on cooking, but maybe you'll get distracted by the TV, right? Especially what's been on TV lately. Multitasking, so being able to, you know, conduct two tasks at the same time. And then working memory, maybe it might be harder for someone to calculate a tip at a restaurant. So here's just a graphical representation of what I just talked about. So the red arrow here is pointing to what's called perceptual speed, but like I said on the previous slide, I'll call that processing speed or mental quickness. That as you can see, at 25 is highest, but then it declines precipitously, it looks like, all the way until we're about 88, okay? All the other abilities, they kind of have this nice, almost a plateau, right? So, for example, let's look at inductive reasoning, also known as problem solving. That's at this level, but then it stays kind of the same until 88, when it just declines by about 5 points on a T-score, okay? So the takeaway here is that perceptual speed or mental quickness does decline with age. How do we maintain these mental abilities? We see research that physical exercise does indeed improve or have a protective effect on our cognitive function, particularly our ability to switch our attention from one task to another. There are other Eastern forms of physical exercise or meditation, such as yoga and Tai Chi. Also, mindfulness meditation can have protective effects on our attention. Diet as well. A diet high in antioxidants has shown to have protective effects on our cognition, particularly blueberries and green tea. Okay, and also, it is beneficial for our speed of processing. A diet high in vitamin D, healthy fats, leafy greens, and red wine in moderation is protective on our cognitive function. Okay? So we really conceptualize cognition on a continuum rather than, you know, being young at 25 and then all of a sudden becoming, you know, mentally impaired. That's not how it works. Normal aging does not look like that. But what is abnormal is what you see here on the screen. First, you have age-related cognitive decline, but some people do convert to mild cognitive impairment, which is an intermediate stage, a middle stage between age-related cognitive decline and dementia, okay? So to the left here is better, obviously. To the right is worse. Alzheimer's disease, as you may know, is the most common form of dementia. So maybe intervening before someone develops dementia may be the best time, right? So that's what I'm going to talk about a little bit. But first, let me explore more of the treatable causes of cognitive decline. As you know, when we are feeling stressed, we might not be thinking as clearly. That is true for people who have diagnosable mental disorders such as depression and anxiety. These kinds of disorders can indeed wreak havoc on our cognitive abilities. Depression, anxiety, and the combination of different medications can affect our cognition. Therefore, it's important for doctors to be able to screen for these kinds of problems early and intervene, because these are indeed treatable forms of cognitive impairment. What about the effectiveness of brain fitness programs? That's what I'm here about today. So there are so many types of cognitive fitness programs. Some of them provide what's called cognitive stimulation. Those are things like social engagement, like volunteering for the Corps, for playing crossword puzzles, doing board games, Sudoku, Scrabble, chess, checkers. Travel and leisure activities also fall under the cognitive stimulation realm. These kinds of activities may prevent or maintain your abilities. But how do we improve our abilities? We see that computerized brain fitness programs can be effective in improving our cognitive abilities. But first, what needs to be trained with age? Remember from the first slide, I defined cognition and I talked about what declines with age. So those things that decline need to be trained with age. For example, mental quickness, so speed of processing, as I talked to you about. Attention switching, being able to do one task at the same time of another task, ignoring distraction, multitasking, working memory, again, calculating a tip when you're in a restaurant. Those kinds of abilities decline, but those are also the abilities we want to train with age. What makes brain fitness programs effective, though? Not all brain fitness programs are created equal, unfortunately. So some of the questions we have to ask when we're reading on certain brain training programs, what does it say it's going to actually do? Is it challenging enough, but not so challenging that it's overwhelming and you want to quit, right? Is it adaptive? And what do I mean by adaptive? Does it adjust to your ability as you get better and better on that task? So if you have a brain training program that stays easy the entire way, are you really training your brain, right? Also, what evidence is there that supports that brain fitness program? Are there randomized experiments? Are there true experiments comparing that brain training program to maybe a control games kind of program? Who was actually studied? Was it an impaired population? Was it healthy older adults? Okay. What were the results? And do those results transfer to real world abilities? And are there other benefits? So I want to talk to you guys about perhaps the most well-studied brain fitness program that I study in our lab at the USF Cognitive Aging Lab with Ashley. So this program is called Brain HQ, but there's a specific exercise that has shown to improve our cognitive abilities, and that's called the double decision exercise. I first want to show you a demonstration, though. So I want to just walk you through what you're going to see. So this exercise will measure how fast you can divide your attention between two objects when the outside object is surrounded by clutter. In other words, I'm going to show you a picture, and it's going to flash real quick on the screen, so I want you to pay attention. I want you to look at the center of the screen and be able to identify the central target that appears, and at the same time, identify where this Route 66 sign appears, okay? So here we go, guys. Like I said, it's going to flash really quickly. Ready? Yeah, right? That was quick. They're like, it's impossible. All right, so for those of you who maybe have gotten it, which was in the center? What's that? Yes? Well, what do you think? That was actually in the center. It was the van. And then, where was the 66 sign? Upper right, yep, number one. Exactly. Good job, everyone. So that kind of program is what we use in brain training. And the presentation of that stimulus, that first picture that I showed you, that flash, goes faster and faster as you get better and better. Yeah, but surprisingly, everyone does get better. You set your baseline, and then like I said, brain training programs are supposed to be adaptive as you get better. It can even go down as fast as 17 milliseconds, and people are able to get that correct. Okay, yeah. 5 minutes. Someone said 5 minutes he'd need. So let me talk more about the research results from various studies that have used brain training, particularly that double decision exercise. So I'll talk for all of these studies, they're using older adults without any noticeable cognitive decline. So there's a specific mental status exam where they had to score above a certain score to be deemed cognitively normal, okay? So for study 1 and 2 that I'll discuss, they had to be 55 and older. For studies 3 and 4, which I'll also discuss, they had to be 65 and older. Again, all cognitively normal. So the first study compared the effectiveness of simulator driving training and cognitive training on one's ability to drive. We found that compared to no contact controls, so people who weren't randomized to either kind of training, they were more likely to engage in a dangerous driving maneuver while driving, whereas those randomized to some sort of training, whether simulator or cognitive training, reduce their dangerous driving maneuvers by 40%. Also, they had quicker reaction times to a certain cognitive test of reaction time. And those who were in the speed of processing training via that double decision exercise training that I just showed you, they stopped an average of 23 feet earlier following training relative to no contact controls. Okay, so there's more of that real world application here. Here's just a graphical demonstration of what I just talked about, but these are dangerous driving maneuvers. Those in the white line are randomized to speed of processing training. And as you can see, their dangerous driving maneuvers decreases relative to both the reference, the no contact control group, and the simulator training group. So they had fewer dangerous maneuvers while driving after 18 months of training, or post 18 months post training. Here's just another graphical representation, but basically this is saying that high-risk drivers without cognitive training do reduce their driving over time. So people who aren't randomized to any kind of training unfortunately did not drive as much as those who did do the training. Also, high-risk drivers with cognitive training show characteristics of people who don't have any training, but they're supposed to be very low-risk drivers. So they're able to maintain their driving performance when they participate in a cognitive training program. What about other everyday functional abilities? There's a task called the Timed Instrumental Activities of Daily Living task that we use in the lab. And it asks people to find a name in a telephone book, count correct change from a handful of coins, identify ingredients on canned foods, locating correct items on a shelf. And there's a timed component to this where they have to complete these tasks under a certain time. Those randomized to speed of processing training became faster at these everyday cognitive tasks. We also found that those improvements in divided attention were particularly important to improving everyday function. And I'll also talk about study 4. This was from the active clinical trial in independent and vital elderly, also called the active study, where they examined the long-term effects of cognitive training. This was a multi-site randomized controlled single-blind trial. They compared the effectiveness of 3 cognitive training programs: reasoning training, so that included maybe problem solving, memory training, so learning mnemonics to remember things better, and then speed of processing training, which I talked to you guys about and demonstrated with that double decision exercise. So those are the 3 different trainings, and they also had a no contact control group. There were also booster training sessions. So after all of those groups completed their training, a subsample were invited back for what were called booster training sessions to revamp what they had learned during their training, okay? There was a 5-year follow-up that they conducted on cognition and everyday function in the same older adults that participated in the training, and the results from the 10-year follow-up were recently published. So a long-standing study, as you can see. What did they find? Well, no surprise that those randomized to memory training were able to improve their memory at 5 years. Those randomized to reasoning training were able to maintain their reasoning after 5 years. And those randomized to speed training, all the way to the right, were also able to maintain their speed of processing abilities after 5 years. So we see the duration effects of this kind of training. And this is another representation of what you just saw, but the yellow line that you see there is everyday speed score. So remember that timed instrumental activities of daily living slide that I showed you where we ask participants to count correct change under a certain time, etc. We see that they improve their scores immediately after that training, and they don't decline as much as the other people who were randomized to reasoning, and memory, as well as the no contact control. And that stays pretty high relative to those groups at year 10. Also, self-reported instrumental activities of daily living. So how well does this person feel that they can manage their finances at home? Can they drive to and from the grocery store and shop for their groceries? That's a self-report kind of instrumental activity of daily living that we're asking these participants. Those randomized to speed of processing training rated greater self-reported IDL scores. Not as many difficulties, so higher is better on this graph. And that maintains through year 10. I also want to talk about the impact of training on driving cessation or stopping driving. Studies 2 and 4 show that those who completed the speed of processing training were 40% less likely to stop driving. So whereas 14% of the no contact control stopped driving, 9% who completed 8 or more sessions of cognitive training stopped driving. We see implications on driving safety as well. Those randomized to speed training were at less risk of at-fault crashes, and we use state-recorded crashes for these data. Older drivers also randomized to speed of processing reduced their at-fault crash rates by almost half. Other benefits that we see are shown in health-related quality of life at 2 years. There's a protective effect of this speed training against the onset of depression as well as depressive symptoms among older adults. And also people who are randomized to speed of processing feel that they have more control over their lives as opposed to feeling like a victim of these circumstances. And then finally, I also want to show you some benefits in more impaired samples, because remember, I talked mostly about healthy older adults, but here we see cognitive benefits in people with mild cognitive impairment. Remember that middle stage between healthy aging and dementia. We have mild cognitive impairment. So those randomized to speed of processing maintained their speed performance from baseline all the way to 5 years post, whereas those in the no contact control group, they declined immediately from baseline and really stayed pretty plateaued in their performance through 5 years. We also looked at different subtypes of mild cognitive impairment. Basically, there are different types of this middle stage of mild cognitive impairment where most of your impairment is in memory, or most of your impairment is in another kind of group or another cognitive domain, such as problem solving. And we see, or also multi-domain. So you might have people with mild cognitive impairment who have both a memory impairment as well as some kind of other memory impairment in reasoning or memory. So here we see that those randomized to speed of processing, regardless of their subtype, improved in speed performance. So lower is better on this graph. So like I said, implications. Older adults with mild cognitive impairment experience benefits from training across 5 years, regardless of the type of impairments they have. And I'm excited to share with you these new findings from our, not necessarily from our lab, but my mentor did research with this data set, and she conducted the 10-year follow-up analyses. And we found that speed training does indeed delay dementia onset. So this graph does look very confusing, but basically it's showing that those randomized to speed of processing training via that double decision exercise that I showed you, they reduce their dementia risk by 33%. And we see that over 10 years, okay? And this is pretty much saying that more training, the better. So there was that dose-dependent kind of effect where, remember when I talked about those booster sessions? So a subsample of those people came back for training at 11 and 35 months. Those people, they were at even lower risk of developing dementia after 10 years. They had almost half, so 48% risk reduction of dementia. Okay? So in summary, we find that the double decision exercise via BrainHQ improves cognitive quickness and divided attention. It transfers to these everyday functional performance measures, such as that timed instrumental activities of daily living, faster reaction times. Those older adults who were randomized to speed training maintained their driving abilities, and they also had protection from the instrumental activities difficulty after 10 years. And of course, those new findings that we see a reduction in the risk of dementia after 10 years by almost half. Okay. Again, other benefits, people report better health-related quality of life at 2 years. There was a protective effect on depression, and people felt more in control of their lives. In conclusion, our brain training program that we use in our lab does enhance everyday function. Participants who gain cognitively get the most out of their everyday function. Training gains do last. More training is better, as you saw from that dose-dependent slide with the reduction in dementia risk. And at least 10 to 14 hours of training on that specific double decision exercise is needed for benefits. Where do we go from here? So again, we go back to this area. Where do we really intervene? Are we trying to maintain, or do we want to improve cognitive abilities? Can we extend training to more impaired samples? So you saw that slide on mild cognitive impairment. We're just now starting to analyze research on Parkinson's disease. So we will hopefully have that research out to you within the next few months. And also heart disease. So diseases that aren't necessarily associated with cognitive dysfunction, but can lead to cognitive dysfunction. And finally, let's start to think about how we can evaluate interventions that combined and are more multimodal. Because I bet a lot of us are thinking, well, cognitive training, yeah, that's focusing on cognition. But what about combining that with a diet intervention, physical exercise intervention, a meditation intervention, for example, a social engagement intervention? So all of those things can perhaps be combined to create a multimodal kind of training approach.
For more information about the Byrd Alzheimer's Institute, you can visit health.usf.edu/byrd. That's health.usf.edu/byrd. For the BrainHQ exercises, you can visit brainhq.com. And as always, if you would like more information about mental health and aging resources in our area, such as our monthly support groups and symposiums, please visit our website at mentalhealthandaging.org or call the Coalition at 813-419-4902. Again, thank you to Bernadette and the USF Health Byrd Alzheimer's Institute for contributing to today's program. Be sure to tune into our next show, where our goal is to provide all of our listeners with aging well options for both mind and body. For Debbie Kaneen, this has been Jonathan Guzman, inviting you to enjoy the programming on our local radio station. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again after a while.